Welcome to Ring of Fire. I'm Farron Cousins. Coming up on today's show, Donald Trump's very first criminal trial began this week, so I will bring you all of the ups and downs and, of course, all of the defeats that Donald Trump has already suffered after just a few days. We also finally got the reports from that audit in the state of Arkansas, and Sarah Huckabee Sanders, the governor of Arkansas, has now been referred for a criminal investigation over the $19,000 lectern that she purchased last year. And Special Prosecutor Jack Smith submitted a filing to Judge Eileen Cannon this week where he basically told her, stop indulging in all of Donald Trump's idiotic requests. And a lot of folks have a lot of questions about what could happen if Donald Trump gets convicted. What does that mean for his campaign? What does that mean for the election? And I will take the time to explain what all of this means, and I'll let you know what we still do not know. All of that and so much more is coming up on this week's show. And don't forget, you can get the full show every week by signing up and becoming a member at rofpodcast.com. And if you want Ring of Fire every day of the week, go subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. Donald Trump's hush money trial began on Monday, but before he even stepped foot into the courtroom, starting at 5:39 a.m. on Monday morning, Donald Trump got on Truth Social and went absolutely ballistic, having a complete and total meltdown about what lay in store for him for the rest of the day. Trump began the morning, again 5:39 a.m., by posting this. As virtually every legal scholar has powerfully stated, the Biden-Manhattan witch hunt case is, among other things, barred by the statute of limitations. This trial should be ended by the highly conflicted presiding judge. So, right out of the gate, Donald Trump wakes up, gets on his phone, sends this out to the public, and none of it is true, right? There's no highly respected legal scholars out there that say that this case should be barred. In fact, the appellate court had already taken up the issue of the statute of limitations, and they did decide that some of the things that they wanted to go after him for could not be done. In fact, actually, I think that was the fraud trial, not this one, but same kind of scenario. Because Donald Trump was president for 4 years and could not be held legally accountable, whether for the fraud trial or for the hush money, the statute of limitations was suspended. So, no, there is not a statute of limitations issue with this case, nor is there one for the hush money trial. Not to mention the fact Biden has nothing to do with any of this, yet that is the narrative that Trump is going with to try to use his trials to smear his political opponent. He then went on this tirade. The radical left Democrats are already cheating on the 2024 presidential election by bringing, or helping to bring, all of these bogus lawsuits against me, thereby forcing me to sit in courthouses and spend money that could be used for campaigning instead of being out in the field knocking crooked Joe Biden, the worst president in the history of the United States. Election interference, he ended with. Even before the trial started, you had already basically cut out most of your rallies down to like one a week at best because you didn't have the money to pay for them. And yeah, part of the reason you don't have the money to pay for them is because you've spent all your campaign cash on your legal fees. However, if you are worth as much money as you say you are, you technically didn't need to do that. You chose to do that. You could have been out there holding multiple rallies every day, but instead, you decided you didn't want to spend your personal money on the trials, so that's why you're in the situation that you're in. And then, right before he walked into that courthouse, he stopped and talked to the press where he said this. This is an assault on America. Nothing like this has ever happened before. There's never been anything like it. Every legal scholar says this case is nonsense. It never should have been brought. There has never been anything like this. There is no case. People don't necessarily like Donald Trump say this is an outrage. This case was brought. This is political persecution, a persecution like never before. Nobody has ever seen anything like it. All right, you know what? I'm not going to continue reading this because he's just repeating himself like every three sentences. This has never happened before, and we know that because it's never happened, and if it had happened, it would have never happened before, but it has happened now, but not before. Oh my God, like, he's going insane before our eyes. This case is pushing him to the brink of madness! And he can't even form a cogent thought anymore. He cannot string a sentence together because he is so terrified about what's going to happen as this case progresses. Recently, Donald Trump's lawyers filed a motion with Judge Eileen Cannon, who of course is overseeing the documents case, but they filed a motion with her saying, hey Judge, I don't know if you've noticed this, but our client, starting on Monday, April 15th, actually has a big criminal trial in Manhattan taking place, and therefore, because of that, the deadline that you have set for, what is it, May 9th, for us to finish reviewing classified documents? Yeah, we totally can't do that because, again, you know, you get this big old trial in New York. So our client cannot go through these classified documents, nor can we. And in response to that, over this past weekend, Special Prosecutor Jack Smith filed his own motion where he told Judge Cannon, this is total BS. Here is what Jack Smith said in his filing. The defendants have had ample notice that these deadlines would be scheduled and have already had months to complete the work. Counsel should already be prepared to meet these deadlines, and in any event, other commitments are not grounds for postponements. Each time the court sets a new deadline in this case and attempts to keep it moving toward trial, the defendants reflexively ask for an adjournment. That must stop, he says. Having made such decisions, they should not be allowed to use their overlapping engagements to perpetually delay trial in this case. The court should reject the defendant's latest delay tactic. What's happening is Jack Smith is starting to get pissed off. He's getting pissed off that these people, Donald Trump's lawyers, they knew that this May 9th deadline was coming up for months. They have had more than enough time, as Smith explains, to go through these classified documents. That portion of it, by the way, began last fall. Okay? You have had months. You have had half a year to go through these classified documents. And you just didn't do it. Like, that's not our fault. That's not the judge's fault, Jack Smith is saying. That's your fault. That's bad lawyering. If, of course, that is what is happening. And Jack Smith cleverly points out, that's not what's happening at all. They've been through the documents. They know what they're doing. They're only trying to play this trial in Manhattan against the trial down here in Florida. So, Judge, this must stop, he says. This must stop. Now, those are powerful words. And it's a powerful argument. And if it had been made in front of any other judge in the country, probably would have worked. But we are talking about a judge that every time she gets the chance, bends over backwards to help Donald Trump. Yes, she's thrown Jack Smith a couple of bones here and there, usually on issues that don't necessarily matter, or when Smith has had to threaten to go to the appellate court to undo her decision. Most recently, of course, last week, he said, if you don't seal the names of the witnesses, I'm going to go to the appellate court and have them overturn your previous decision, to which Cannon responded, I'll just undo my decision. Yeah, no problem about that. So Smith doesn't get results from her unless he gets tough against her. And this motion from him is pretty tough, but there's no threat in it. So without that threat of going to the higher court to overrule you, it won't surprise me when Cannon issues a decision delaying that May 9th deadline. Monday, the very first day of Donald Trump's criminal trial, got off to a very eventful start. Ron Filipkowski over with Midas Touch is doing a phenomenal job, by the way, of giving a breakdown every single day of not only what happened, but he's explaining it as it happens. So if you're looking for like up to the minute, you know, reports on what's going on with Trump's trial, Ron Filipkowski at Midas Touch is doing a phenomenal job of it. And I do believe he's going to be doing this all throughout the trial. Now, having said that, let's get to the meat of this. First and foremost, Donald Trump walked into that courtroom, and before they even began the jury selection, which is what today was supposed to be, the judge had to take a few minutes to slap down Donald Trump's most recent requests. Specifically, the judge first decided to issue a ruling on Trump's motion for the judge to recuse himself by saying, no, I'm not going to do that because my daughter is a Democrat does not mean that I am personally biased. She's an individual human being with her individual beliefs and her job. And I'm not a part of that, the judge says, so no, I am not going to recuse myself. Please stop asking. But that wasn't the first smackdown of the day that Judge Juan Merchan had to issue to Donald Trump. Oh, no. He then came out and said, you've also filed a motion with me asking for the trial to be delayed because, gosh darn it, you've just got too much campaigning to go out there and do. And the judge said, I don't care. I'm not going to delay this. We're not going to postpone it. You have Wednesdays off, right? We're only going to do trial Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday each week. Go campaign on Wednesdays. You've got some Passover days coming up where we're not going to be in session. Go campaign on those days. Hey, and don't forget, you've got weekends. Now, part of the reason Judge Merchan decided to go that route with telling Trump, you've got plenty of time, has to do with the fact that about, last week, it wasn't even a full week ago, you had one of Trump's campaign spokespeople doing an interview. I forget what network it was on. But anyway, she mentioned that Trump has a, quote, big, beautiful plane, and basically said that the trial is not going to interfere with Donald Trump going out and campaigning. So, oops, maybe you should get all your people in line, Donald, and get them all on the same talking point before they go out there and ruin the motions that you filed with the judge to, of course, get the case further delayed. So I do think it's important that Donald Trump's first few moments in court were him getting his butt handed to him. Like, that kind of sets the tone for how this entire trial is going to be. The judge is not going to put up with bullcrap. The judge is not going to tolerate Trump's lawyers' idiotic filings. This is a no-nonsense judge that wants to stick to the facts, and that is probably not going to work out in Donald Trump's favor. Well, folks, now that the former president of the United States is actually sitting through his very first criminal trial, likely the first of four, it's important to address some of the questions that the public has. And ever since Trump walked into that courtroom on Monday, questions and misinformation on social media has been going wild. People want to know if he's convicted, can he still run? Can the Republicans replace him on the ballot? What happens if he's convicted, goes to jail in New York, and then somehow still gets elected? Well, fear not, folks. We've got some answers for you. First and foremost, if Trump is convicted, can he still run for president? Yes. Without a doubt, without hesitation, if he is convicted, if he is sitting in a jail cell, he can still run for and be elected president. But what if we get a conviction before the Republican convention? Right? I mean, parties get to set their own rules for the conventions. They get to set their own nominating process. And even though Trump has secured enough delegates to win the Republican nomination, can't they just go to the convention and vote for somebody else? Well, thanks to Ted Cruz back in 2016, no, they can't. Because remember that time when Ted Cruz went out there still bitter at Donald Trump and said, hey, delegates, vote your conscience. Basically trying to get the delegates to vote for not Donald Trump so maybe they could have a different nominee. Well, after that happened, the RNC said, you know what? We're going to change the rules. Delegates are now locked in, and if they vote for somebody other than the person that they are supposed to vote for from their state, then their vote just doesn't count. So by the RNC's own rules, which, thanks to the fact that Donald Trump's daughter-in-law is now the co-chair, will not change, they cannot come up with another nominee. Trump is the Republican nominee, whether or not he gets convicted. And that could end up being a massive problem for Republicans. But again, Trump's got his people in charge of the RNC, so they're not changing those rules. The next question, could he be president from prison? Yes. Yes, he could. And that, of course, is where the real issues start to come in. Because what he is facing right now in this hush money trial are state charges. Donald Trump, if elected president, cannot pardon himself from these charges if he is in prison. So he can't do anything about it. But there's a couple options of what could happen if Trump wins the nomination, becomes the president, and then is still sitting in a jail cell. First and foremost, his vice president and the members of his cabinet could invoke the 25th Amendment by saying, hey, this guy obviously can't do the duties, so we're going to use the 25th Amendment to kick him out of office. But that would require the people that Trump himself picks to invoke that, so the chances of that happening, I think, are less than 1% if we were to get to that point. The other thing that could happen, and this is according to the New York Times, is that Donald Trump could then sue, arguing in front of the, you know, federal court system, not the state court system, that being locked in jail prevents me from doing my constitutional duty as president of the United States. So therefore, being in prison is now a violation of my oath of office. It's a violation of my constitutional rights as president. Therefore, the federal courts have to nullify this state conviction. And then that suddenly, believe it or not, that actually creates even more constitutional problems, because then we're dealing with, you know, the separation of powers. We're dealing with, you know, the state laws and the federal laws. And what's the Constitution say about this? What it at that point, no legal scholar has an answer. So if we get to that point where Donald Trump wins the election and is in prison, legal scholars at this point are basically like, we don't friggin' know. Like, it's going to be chaos. It's going to be crazy. But, you know, maybe we'll see. There's a non-zero percent chance that that happens. Like, that's what's so scary about this. So lots of things are possible. Some of them are not. Trump is the Republican nominee no matter what. He can still be president from jail. But at the end of the day, all of this hinges on whether or not he not only gets convicted, but also sent to prison. Because see, a lot of people think if Trump gets convicted, he's automatically going to go to jail. And that may not be the case. Regardless of what the punishment is, or the maximum punishment is, I should say, for the charges he's facing, the judge could also just say, okay, well, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to give you 3 months of house arrest. I'm going to not give you time in prison. I'm going to give you 500 hours of community service. I'm going to make you pay a $100,000 fine. The judge has options that are not prison. So just because Trump could get convicted doesn't always mean he's going to go to jail. So to put it another way, the answer to all the questions that people have out there is kinda, we don't really know, because we are definitely in uncharted waters right now. The investigation in the state of Arkansas by a group of state auditors into the $19,000 lectern that freshly minted Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders bought last year has officially come to a close. And the auditors concluded, after their exhaustive investigation, that this whole thing actually needs to be investigated by prosecutors, so they have now sent LecternGate to career prosecutors in Little Rock, Arkansas, to criminally investigate Sarah Huckabee Sanders and her administration. This is massive. Now, here is something people may not fully understand about this story. And for those of you not familiar with it at all, Sarah Huckabee Sanders was sworn in at the beginning of last year, 2023. She immediately goes out and buys a $19,000 custom lectern to travel with her all over the state. Now, at the time, everybody in the state was like, well, hold up, that's way too expensive. Something doesn't smell right here. And they were right about that, and that is what the auditors found. It is believed, although this will be determined after the criminal investigation, that the lectern was not actually $19,000, but that Huckabee Sanders' administration may have cooked the books to make it seem like they spent $19,000 on this, but in reality, they may have spent the money on unauthorized travel. But that's another thing that Sarah Huckabee Sanders immediately did upon becoming governor, is she shielded her travel records from the state. So when you add all of that up together, yeah, certainly smells like something is rotten in Little Rock, Arkansas. But here is what the report found, compiled, of course, by Ron Filipkowski over at Midas Touch. Number one, the podium was paid for before it was delivered. It was applied to operating expenses, which does not include equipment purchases. The state agency that monitors government purchases was never notified. The bill of lading was shredded by the governor's office, and there were three different invoices that all appeared to conflict with each other. And, of course, the amount paid for the lectern was more than double the estimate that the company that made it originally gave Sarah Huckabee Sanders. So how in the hell did you end up paying double what the estimate was for this lectern? And to make things even that much more suspicious, Sarah Huckabee Sanders and her entire administration refused to sit for conversations with the auditors, as did the company that produced the lectern. And I'm willing to bet that that fact alone is why this was referred for a criminal investigation. Now, it's important to remember, it has been referred for a criminal investigation, not criminal charges. You know, there is a world of difference between the two. The prosecutors will now have to investigate it if they even choose to do that, because they could just say, no, we're not going to look into it. It's over with. But if they choose to look into it and then decide to bring criminal charges, they would have to impanel a grand jury prior to that. So we won't get a resolution to this if they're going to actually investigate it, possibly for at least a year down the road, maybe even longer. So this is not over, but it stinks to high heaven. And again, this all happened in Sarah Huckabee Sanders' first few months in office. Nothing about this smells right, and hopefully those prosecutors in Little Rock will in fact look into this, because this could be just the tip of the iceberg. So on Monday, during Donald Trump's very first day of his very first criminal trial, he got a little sleepy. And there were reports that he actually dozed off during the jury selection process. And, you know, I mean, hey, can you really fault him? We know that he was up on Monday morning sending out frantic posts on Truth Social starting at 5:39 a.m., so he probably didn't sleep too well the night before his criminal trial began. So by the time he gets into court and that adrenaline kind of runs down a little bit, he probably got a little sleepy, you know, may have dozed off a little bit. And of course, the internet had a field day with this over the last couple days, calling him Sleepy Don and just attacking him for being a feeble old man who is incapable of staying awake. But here's the thing. It wasn't just people on the internet that were making fun of Donald Trump. The Biden campaign actually did a phenomenal job of trolling Donald Trump over the allegations that he fell asleep during his trial. And they put out a memo to the public that says this, and pay attention for the key words that they use, because obviously this is a hush money trial dealing with payments where Donald Trump allegedly fell asleep. And I'm pointing out those words because you're going to hear some of those in this memo. Wake up, Donald. After stormy abortion ban coverage, Trump poll memo attempts to hush panic. The Trump campaign is in full-on panic mode over abortion. This morning, they put out a desperate polling memo that didn't cover the full days of fallout and egregiously misrepresents Trump and Biden's positions. to try and hush the awful coverage out of Arizona and fallout from Trump's endorsement of every extreme abortion ban in states around the country. The gambit won't pay off, though, because Trump says himself he is, quote, proudly the person responsible for overturning Roe and enabling Arizona's extreme ban. Trump's campaign is fast asleep about a simple fact underscored by recent polling. The vast majority of the American people, including 86% of Democrats and 67% of independents, support federal protections for reproductive freedom. We know Trump isn't winning on this issue because he refused to even acknowledge abortion or overturning Roe at his rally in Pennsylvania this past Saturday night. And then you had a statement from Biden-Harris 2024 spokesperson James Singer added onto the memo that said, "Open your eyes and wake up, Donald. We'll tell you what your pollsters won't. The women of America will not be gaslit into forgetting what you've done, and you will face the consequences at the ballot box this November." So again, a lot of clever wordplay there. You're not going to hush the issue about the payment. Yeah, I think that's pretty clever. Listen, I am not taking anything away at all from Biden's campaign people, okay? These people are smart, they are quick, and they are on top of it. Because not only do you obviously tie in the fact that he allegedly fell asleep during his trial on Monday, but you're also using it to bring light to a very important issue that many people in this country say is the most important issue heading into November. So, kind of a double whammy there. Full props to the Biden campaign for doing this, because I believe this was expertly done. It isn't just Donald Trump's fate that is resting on this hush money trial and, of course, the outcome of this trial. It could, in fact, determine the fate of the entire Republican Party. Because, as everybody knows, Donald Trump has officially taken over the RNC, which itself is the Republican Party apparatus. So everything that happens to Trump actually happens to the Republican Party itself. And because of that, some Republicans have decided to start freaking out, and one of them, Byron Donalds, Republican congressman from the state of Florida, decided to make his pitch to the people of New York, begging them in a TV appearance this week to acquit Donald Trump of all the charges. Here is what Byron Donalds, again, Republican congressman from Florida, said on Newsmax this week. "My plea is to the people of Manhattan that may sit on this trial. Please do the right thing for this country. Everybody's allowed to have their political viewpoints, but the law is supposed to be blind and no respecter of persons. This is a trash case. There is no crime here. And if there is any potential for a verdict, they should vote not guilty." Now, to me, that kind of seems a lot like potential jury tampering. You directly addressed people in the area where the jury pool came from. You directed it to the people who may sit on the jury, and you told them that this is a trash case, and then you instructed them on how you expect them to vote. If you were to do that in person to one of these people, that is 100% jury tampering. So I believe Judge Juan Merchan may want to send out a little bit of a feeler to Byron Donalds and just kind of let him know that, hey, bud, you're walking a very thin line here. And if I were you, I might be careful what I direct towards these potential jurors before they are picked, because they had not been picked at that point. So, you know, watch what you say. Wouldn't want to have to hit you with some jury tampering charges. And then, after Byron Donalds said that to Newsmax, he did do an interview with the Daily Beast where he said, quote, "You get an alleged conviction on BS charges in front of a judge that is not impartial, and that's supposed to sway my mind? Man, I'm bigger than that. I don't worry about that kind of stupid stuff." Kind of seems like you are, though. I mean, you wouldn't go out there and tell the people in Manhattan to acquit Donald Trump if you weren't worried about it. So you are worried about it, because we know that, because you said that on live TV. I mean, it's one thing to just say it over the phone to a reporter like, I'm not worried about it. You were on live TV begging these people to say that Trump is not guilty before ever hearing a fact in the case. But it's not just Byron Donalds. Daily Beast also spoke to J.D. Vance, who, of course, is on Donald Trump's shortlist for as a potential VP pick. J.D. Vance said, quote, "I'm very uncomfortable with the weaponized justice system. I couldn't care less what a weaponized justice system says. Ultimately, it's not going to change my vote. I don't think it'll change most Americans' votes." Hey, J.D., you ever heard of something called polls? Because literally every single poll out there says this will, in fact, change the way people are going to vote in November, so perhaps do a little research before you go out there and make stupid statements. But Republicans aren't going to do any research, and they are going to continue making stupid statements because they are scared, I don't want to use any profanity, they're scared to death about what this trial is going to do to their party. Because no matter what, convicted or not, Donald Trump is going to be the first Republican on the ballot in November. That will be the first name with an R next to it that people see across the country on their ballots. And if he's sitting there with a criminal conviction and that little R next to his name, there's a good chance voters aren't just going to take it out on him, but they're going to take it out on all the other R's all the way down that ballot. And that is what scares people like J.D. Vance and Byron Donalds. Donald Trump woke up on Tuesday morning, the morning after, of course, his very first day in his criminal trial, and he woke up angry on Tuesday. In fact, he woke up very angry on Tuesday, and as he usually does, the first thing he did in the morning was he got on Truth Social and let the world know how angry he is about everything that's happening to him. But this time, it wasn't just letting us know that he's angry. He also had a demand for Judge Juan Merchan. And that demand was that you take this gag order off of me right now. Here's what Trump said on Truth Social. "This conflicted Trump-hating judge won't let me respond to people that are on TV lying and spewing hate all day long. He is running roughshod. He did that as two words. So, sorry, he is running roughshod over my lawyers and legal team. The New York system of justice is being decimated by critics from all over the world. I want to speak, or at least be able to respond. Election interference, rigged, unconstitutional trial. Take off the gag order," followed, of course, by 3 exclamation points. That's how you know he means business, when you get the 3 exclamation points. 1 exclamation point, you know, you can excuse that, but with his 3, you know he means business, right? Now, here's the question I have. Actually, before I ask that, Trump then went on to another post and he said, "My trial is an assault on America." Sure, whatever. It's not, but okay. Now, when he says this, like, take off the gag order, what I want to know is, in Donald Trump's mind, does he think that Judge Merchan is going to see that and be like, I didn't know he wanted me to take this off. Why didn't anybody tell me? Of course I'll take it off. Like, what do you think is going to happen? Do you honestly think there's anybody in that New York courthouse that's going to see this and be like, "Hey, Judge, we got to take this thing off, man. Yeah, hey, look at this. I mean, right? I mean, 3 exclamation points? Oh my God, we can't fight that." Like, that's not going to happen. The people who already believe the gag order should be taken off you already believe the gag order should be taken off you. You're not going to win over new people who see your post and are suddenly like, "Oh, well, I guess he's got a point there." I mean, listen, you have a gag order on you because you are in a position of power. You're in a position of influence, which is why you are not allowed to talk about the people who are going to be witnesses in the case. Meanwhile, the witnesses in the case, like Michael Cohen, Stormy Daniels, they're allowed to go out in the media because they don't have that kind of power. And of course, because they're the ones testifying, they can't influence their own testimony to go a certain way to appease themselves. You see what I mean? That's why they can do it and you can't. But as this trial proceeds, we are going to see more panic from Donald Trump. We're going to see him waking up every morning, getting on Truth Social first thing, spreading lies, spreading hatred, spreading vitriol, because that's all he has right now. He is a very scared, somewhat sleepy, old man. His life is crashing down around him, because let's not forget, like, as he is dealing with this, we also have all of those unanswered questions about his bond in the fraud trial. Like, that could be taken away from him possibly this week. So yeah, he's worried he may have to pay $464 million. He's scared he may go to jail. He's scared that he's not raising any money for his campaign. He's scared that Biden is now beating him in all the polls. He is scared about everything because everything for him right now is going very badly. And that's all the time we have for the free portion of this week's Ring of Fire podcast this week. But if you want the full show every week, go sign up and become a member at ROFpodcast.com.